Zimbabwe's incumbent president keeps power after national elections, a result that's raised eyebrows both in and outside the country. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunes. Good morning. The opposition leader in Zimbabwe has rejected the election results, while international observers have voiced concerns about transparency. The Southern African country faces deep economic challenges, with high unemployment and a severe foreign currency crisis. Busisa Moyo is the CEO of Zimbabwean food manufacturer United Refineries.
It's common knowledge that Zimbabwe has arrears problem with the international financial institutions like the IMF, the World Bank, IFC and others. And that is a key factor to Zimbabwe's economic challenges. And the new president will have to tackle that very swiftly to address the arrears problem that the country has, which affects a lot of things, from access to capital. Our business needs access to low, appropriately priced capital to allow us to produce, to manufacture, and also to support farmers, for example, who produce the raw material, soya beans, which is what we process here. So the issue of international re-engagement, in particular the creditor situation, is a priority. But that must be done in the context of a cohesive and a coherent economic revival plan that takes the country out of the economic doldrums. And I think that's the biggest challenge.
You mentioned the economic doldrums Zimbabwe has been in. When I was in the country recently, jobs was the number one issue for most people I spoke to. Many people are unemployed. But ZANU-PF has been in power for 38 years now. They're responsible for this economic decline, aren't they? Can they really bring change?
The fact of the matter is, it will be tough to reverse that. But I pray that the president and the cabinet that he will select is really up to the task. And I think they have a chance to do this. I don't think there are very many chances left after this five-year period. The populace may not be very tolerant of leadership that does not respond appropriately to stark economic needs. So they have a chance. They have been elected and we have to respect that. So now they need to put their head down and deliver.
Busisa Moyo. Let's do the numbers. Global stock markets are mixed while the British pound tips lower. Bank of England Governor Mark Carney said the chance of a no-deal Brexit is, quote, uncomfortably high and highly undesirable. This as concerns mount about possible disruptions to business and trade after the UK leaves the EU in March. Despite Venezuela's ongoing economic crisis, the country's gasoline is still the cheapest in the world and less expensive than water. But President Nicolas Maduro wants to change that, as the BBC's Daniel Gallas reports.
In Venezuela, 1 gallon of gasoline can cost less than 1 cent of a US dollar, depending on the exchange rate a person uses. But that is about to change. President Nicolas Maduro ordered a vehicle census to be held this week. The government wants to know how many cars and what models are being used by Venezuelans. Authorities will later use those numbers to come up with an energy policy that is likely to increase the price of fuel. Maduro says Venezuela's subsidized gasoline is being illegally smuggled out of the country and into Colombia. The new energy policy is part of a series of economic reforms that will kick in later this month. On August 20th, the government of Venezuela will cut 5 zeros from its currency, the bolivar, which is suffering from hyperinflation. Venezuela is one of the world's leading oil producers, but despite its wealth, the country is facing shortages of food and medicine. The severe economic crisis has forced thousands of Venezuelans to leave the country.
Daniel Gallas. Employment is on the mind of Wall Street today ahead of the closely watched July jobs report. The topic is also of much discussion in Botswana, often described as one of the world's fastest growing economies. Despite that, underemployment is a big issue for the country's younger workers, as the BBC's Suping Chan discovered.
Precious Lesser Teddy considers herself lucky. At the age of 26, she shunned the security of a job and started her own bakery business. But in a country where one in three people aged between 18 and 30 is unemployed, she says qualifications don't always lead to a job.
Most of the time you have to know someone to be able to get a job.
I've come to the small village of Molepolole. As you can hear in the background, the music is blaring and the youths are chanting. There's around 20 to 30, all aged between 13 and 25. For them, Naive Street Park has become a sanctuary for them to express themselves and gain the skills needed for employment. I've come to speak to Leonard, the organiser here.
We offer networking and we talk about how you can find a job or how to create your own jobs.
Watching in the audience are members of the Botswana Youth Empowerment Project, who work with the club to promote its services and break out of what Oteng Kapotemang describes as a rigid mindset.
We are brought up to know that you need to go to school, graduate, get a job in the government, get married, have kids, then that's it. We need to be more trained with jobs that doesn't require you to be in office all day.
At just 30 years old, Botswana's trade minister knows the struggles that young people here go through. But does Bogolo Kenawendo believe that nepotism is a problem in Botswana?
I don't think so. Because I'll say I'm here, and so many people actually asked where did I come from in order to become the minister. I would like to say in good faith that the people with the experience, with qualifications that show up and show off do get opportunities.
Back at the youth club, spirits are high and the competition is hotting up. But in a country where high levels of unemployment persist, despite robust economic growth, it's clear that more needs to be done to prepare Botswana's youth for the modern world of work. In Habaroni, Botswana, I'm the BBC's Suping Chan for Marketplace.
And finally, don't like long lines? Neither do the employees at the Eiffel Tower in Paris. They went on a two-day strike because preferential use of elevators for reserve ticket holders caused up to three-hour waits for on-the-day ticket buyers. The tower's 300-strong staff welcomes 6 million visitors a year. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.